For those of you wondering, there is a giant bag of lemons still sitting between us.
It's amazing how many lemons there are. And also, there's that bag of lemons over there.
Oh, that's true. There's a lot of bags of lemons.
We have a lot of lemons.
We're collecting them, clearly.
Also, like, the cleaning wipes on the table are lemon-scented, so it's like I can smell them, too.
Wow, subconsciously. No, fully consciously is how I've been doing this.
Get me out of here is what I'm trying to tell you, and you're not listening.
You'll never leave.
SOS. Okay. How are you? How's everyone?
Are you good? How are you, folks? I'm great.
I'm doing just fine.
Fantastic.
It is now February, is it?
Don't look at me.
It's not in real life, but when people listen to it, I think it's February.
Honestly, if you said it was February right now, I'd be like, oh, okay.
Well, you know what?
I have no idea.
If this comes out in February, you know what the scariest part of that is?
What?
A whole 12th of 2020 is over now.
Why would you say that?
Like, just to, like, keep things in crazy-ass perspective.
I'm not kidding. Like, 2020 has been tough because, like, prepping for the tour was a lot. And Blaze has been sick for so long.
Blaze has had the flu for, I think, 3 years.
Yeah, he's been sick since I've known him, I think, with the
flu. Oh, that checks out.
He's, like, so, so ill.
He is the sickest human being I've ever seen.
Literally, look, this is what if you're on YouTube, these are literal hygiene masks I bought. Medical-grade hygiene masks. I walked around my house in them.
I am impressed. Like, you live in the house with him, and he has had, I'm not kidding, the grossest flu since Florida.
Yeah.
And you have not gotten sick. I've been wildly amazed.
So, like, obsessive about it, obsessed with it, because we were going on tour, and I was like, I can't be, like, we need to do this. Yeah, we need to get this done.
We have to have a clear mind
honestly,
the first time.
I didn't even care on stage. I just was like, I need to finish my part, my work for the tour, and I couldn't do it if I had a fever. And so I was wearing hygiene masks. I walked around with Purell. Blaze slept on the couch. I washed my hands every 5 seconds, washed all the bedding. Like, I was very, it worked.
It somehow worked, but also, like, he's still, like, a little sniffly. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, he is a little sick still. So I'm trying to avoid, but we both got the flu shot. So it was something else, some other strain, I guess.
I don't know either, but between you, between like Blaze / you, and then also RJ getting sick.
And he's an athlete.
He's an athlete. If he's getting sick, that is some powerful stuff.
And I also have like a really weakened, like a really fucked up immune system from the medications I'm on. So like, I'm like a superhero.
Yes. Yes, you are.
Just kidding.
Super villain, but.
Right. Sorry. Wrong direction.
But yeah. So anyway, happy 2 out of 12.
Yeah, we're going to a couple of shows this month. We're doing Sacramento, San Francisco.
Yeah.
I think on one of them on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Sacramento.
We're not going to be with our Valentines.
I'll be with my Valentine on stage. It's lemon.
Fuck you, Christine. Wow, I really...
I'm just
that one
teasing.
Hurt.
It's
that
you.
One hurt.
I went into it thinking it was you, but then you made a face, so I changed my mind.
It was a face of kindness and heartwarming.
I thought you were going to be like, get away from me. So I was embarrassed. So I changed my track.
You're like, yeah, me neither.
It's like the kid with the note, like, nope, that wasn't for you.
Right.
You circled no. So oops, that was meant for someone else. No, you are my Valentine M always.
Yeah.
Well, and forever.
Well, it's definitely been thrust upon us at
it
this
has
point,
been,
hasn't it?
Unfortunately.
Also, that means in the next couple days is gonna be the actual podcast anniversary.
That's right.
Wow.
3 years.
3 years of this.
It's a toddler.
Bullshit. It's a full-blown toddler. Like, our podcast can now like walk and speak and color.
Pick up Cheerios with one hand?
Yeah.
Or is that, or I don't know much about babies.
is that a milestone?
Is that a thing?
Holding something with one hand?
It was for me because I have such bad, my mom still makes fun of me that I still eat this way or pick things up with my whole hand and like with goldfish, I'll like just shovel them into my mouth.
You really never learned, huh?
No.
Your next milestone never came.
I can't like pick things up with my finger. I need to like handful them. It's really sad.
When I was three, I was a literal helmet kid because I was so tall. I was born 2 feet tall. So by the time I was three, I was like
your poor mother.
Literal giant. Oof. And so I was I was physically growing faster than I was developmentally. And so I didn't know. Like, I learned...
To use your limbs.
Yeah, I didn't know how to catch myself if I fell, and I was falling, like, twice as high as
And your center of gravity was suddenly a foot higher.
So my mom had to literally have a helmet on me all of the time.
Oh, no.
For, like, a good 6 months to a year, I think. I was literally always in a helmet because my mom was afraid that I was learning to, like, stand up and hold on to things so quickly, but I was not learning to catch myself if I fell. So I was just fucking timbering.
Poor Em.
And my head was like falling into like corners of tables and shit.
And the fire poker. I remember that.
But that was when I was two. That was the first time I tried chocolate cake.
Oh, that's right.
That was a good day and a bad day.
And a bad day. Depending on how you look at it.
Depending on my day or my mother's day. It was a good day.
Speaking of mothers and haphazardly, my mother used to call, you know, when you go timber, when like something falls.
Yeah.
She
what?
She yells lumber.
Oh, because
she can't.
Sweet Renata.
She's like lumber. I'm like, that's not okay. You can have it. I'll just give it to you.
Oh yeah, yeah. My mom. I don't even think says timber. I don't know. Maybe lumber's right. Who knows? And at Renata's point, world, it's right.
I was gonna say at this point, I'm just trust. I just trust everyone else besides my own brain. So.
So, my story this week is very, very short, but it is something that surprisingly a lot of people, I don't know what happened. I don't know if the world shifted in a way where everyone thought of this at the same time and all decided to tweet at me, but there's no like news update. There's no reason people all thought of this at once, but a lot of people requested it. So I'm going to do it.
Great. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Sorry. We have to say our patron of the week.
Oh, God damn it. I am just awful
I'm
at
sorry.
That.
No, no. I just closed it because remember I did the wrong one last time?
Yes. Sorry. We are very good at it. Can you tell, guys?
We desperately are so thankful for your Patreon donations. If you are doing that, we're really thankful. Our patron of the week is Alina from Finland.
Oh.
I know. Alina, I'm going
to... All of a sudden, it matters more to me.
I know. And
love a good Finland.
Their last name has an umlaut, so I'm just not even going to go there with my guess.
What's I won't either,
and I don't know whether they want me to say it, so I'm just gonna say Lena P from Finland.
Lena P,
so thank you for your donation all the way from Europe.
Oh,
I appreciate it deeply.
Thank you across the waters.
Yay.
So
that's what they say.
That's what they say.
Anyway,
that's what I say.
All I have to say is Sacramento, San Francisco, buy your tickets.
Yes, in theory we have just done our Texas leg and it went delightfully.
So great.
I'm certainly hoping it will.
Texas last year was so freaking loud and unbelievable, so I have high hopes.
Yes, I'm manifesting this now for you to have heard it in the past, but it's my future.
Yeah, when I edit this YouTube video in the future, I will confirm whether or not.
Texas, though, please be loud. We would love that.
You just broke my brain. Yes, please be loud. Also, everyone be loud. Okay.
But, and not if you're booing.
But be loud in a nice way.
In a positive way. Be positively loud and loudly positive.
This podcast has a lot of rules that you need to follow. Are you writing them down?
They're all actually kind of very simple. I just need you to remember them all.
Just be kind. Okay, so that's all I have. Oh, watch our lemon napping video on Patreon if you haven't, because really it is the funniest thing
that I literally made
ever happened to me.
So
yeah.
Please go.
And I, instead of preparing for our tour, spent about 45 hours on making the video instead of working on what I should have been working on. So make
I
it worth my while.
I also spent like 45 hours building it. So
that's right. So please go. We need somebody to make it worth our while.
Please someone go compliment us is what we're saying.
Anyway,
it's not necessarily Gemini season, but a lot of Scorpios are currently being created and I'm not liking it. So
I do like that you said it's not necessarily Gemini. Like
it ought to be.
It could be.
It certainly should be.
In like some timelines, maybe it's always.
Yes.
In my
imagine a world where only Geminis roam the earth.
Disaster.
That earth would literally be on fire.
Disaster. Anyway, so thank you guys. Sorry, I don't mean to keep talking about Patreon, but that lemon video, I'm so proud of it. And Em is so fucking genius. And so
wow,
I'm serious, like the comments have been like, Em, what the fuck, like you have this weird talent of building escape rooms. Like
I have a weird talent of building things that nobody should. I like
no, look, it's working.
I do like to use the phrase like I'm capable of anything if I'm sleep deprived enough, and that's exactly what happened.
How do you think this podcast came to be?
How do you think anything in the last official 3 years has happened?
Anyway, okay. Thank you guys, everyone who's supporting us and coming out to see us and just listening.
Yes.
We love you so dearly.
So my next story, it has been recommended to me as that I should cover the Aykroyd family.
What's that? Like Dan Aykroyd?
Like Dan Aykroyd.
What?
Yes. Do you know about him?
No.
Do you know of him at all?
Yeah.
He's a Ghostbuster.
Oh, no. I don't know this.
From the 80s? Like,
no,
the
I know.
Movie?
I mean, I just said Dan Aykroyd, but I don't know.
Yeah,
like, I don't know, like, what this has to do with anything.
Well, he was also in Ghostbusters as a Ghostbuster.
Okay, that makes sense.
Also, fun fact about him. One thing that Dan Aykroyd, that I love most about him. Are you ready?
Yes.
He has Tourette's.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've known that for a while, but that's the... I know him...
finally have a fun trivia fact that applies.
Finally have a buddy. Well, like, I've known him, obviously, as a Ghostbuster, but When I first got diagnosed with Tourette's, my mom gave me this book of like other people with Tourette's.
Oh, that's right.
So I wouldn't feel alone. And Dan Aykroyd was like the only person. Like, that's page one.
What if it was just one page and it was like
it kind of was. It was kind of just a picture of Dan Aykroyd.
I bet nowadays you'd be in that book.
Maybe.
Let's
make
one.
We're both Ghostbusters with Tourette's in our own regards.
Hang on. This is a fantastic spinoff.
And what's interesting is apparently part of his Tourette's. Like he has like the compulsion to become like obsessed with things.
Mm.
And one of his is the paranormal. I think I'm Dan Aykroyd actually.
Wait a second. This is all making sense.
I'm kind of not kidding. Okay. Anyway, by the way, if you've ever wondered why the fuck I twitch so much, right. I have Tourette's.
Welcome. I honestly don't know if anyone knows that because I don't think people do. But...
I think I brought it up a few times. Like, there have been,
but in passing,
there have been two very lovely people that I've met in meet and greets at live shows, who said that they had Tourette's, and I was the first person they heard of that also had it.
There are some not so lovely people who are like, why does M twitch all the time?
I'm like, I have Tourette's, you fucking dick.
Sometimes it's I make Tourette's jokes just to M because
I allow it and they're funny to me.
Because M thinks they're funny, but I would never. So if that, like, it's just about M. I just make fun of M. I just make fun of M.
If it were Tourette's or the fact that I have, like, that I'm 6 feet tall.
And there's tarantula legs. Listen, there's a lot to go on.
It's not because I have Tourette's. It's just another part of me that Christine loves to make fun of.
You and Dan Aykroyd. Of course.
Remember when we played beer pong recently and I fucked up a throw and you're like, oh, that might have been your Tourette's. And I was like, you're not fucking wrong. That's exactly what it was.
But you're also kick-ass at it. So it works in some instances. But, I mean, you can make fun of my poop disease.
I certainly
do.
And
you do, so.
I do. See?
Look how... We're so ill,
we're
dude.
We're all terrible.
We're so sick.
Sick in the mind. Sick in the gut.
Sick in the mind, the gut, and just the nervous system.
And in the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dan Aykroyd, let's talk about my fellow Tourette-ing, twitching Ghostbuster.
Love it.
Well, for those of you who also don't know, he was also very big on SNL. He was in the Blues Brothers with Jim Belushi, and he is also probably, in my mind at least, best known for being a Ghostbuster. So, fun fact about the Ghostbusters, the story was inspired from his family's history with the paranormal.
Wait, what?
Yeah!
See, when you said when you said the Aykroyd family, I was like, there's no
it
way.
It sounds like a haunting,
yeah,
like
it does.
The Perrin family or
exactly.
the Amityville, yeah. So his great-grandfather, so he's a fourth-generation paranormal enthusiast. His great-grandfather was named Samuel Augustus Aykroyd, who was born in 1855, the oldest of 14 children. Holy shit.
Holy.
And they're Canadian.
Holy.
So Dan Aykroyd's better than me.
Wait, hold on. Yeah, you have one. He has one thing going for him that you don't.
That's exactly it. And so originally, we're going to start with Sam, great-grandpa.
Sure.
Originally, Sam was a teacher, but later in life in the 1890s, he became a dentist, which at that time, dentistry was not a space where pain relief was going on during procedures.
Sounds terrible.
Apparently, in some little circle of the dentists of that time, there were a group of dentists who believed that hypnotism would help patients relax. To alleviate the pain, because there was no anesthesia.
Interesting.
Yes. So, apparently, a lot of dentists were actually spiritualists. Who'd have thunk?
What? Well, remember, from your last story, the dentist was the one who ended up coming forward in the Houdini story and saying, that fingerprint is mine.
Very weird. Actually, I had not put that together.
Dentist? Are you a dentist? Can you call us?
Crest? Are you also... Do you do hypnotisms as well?
Crentist? Dr. Crentist?
Dr. Crentis, the hypnotist master. Okay. So,
okay. Also, sorry. It's just so wild to me that somebody was a teacher and then just became a dentist later in life. Like, you'd think it was the other way around.
Right.
It's just like, I didn't know that.
Maybe it was easy to get your dental degree in 1890 when there's like no pain medication.
He's like, no, I don't know how to do anything, but I can hypnotize people.
In the 1890s, it was like, here are pliers.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay.
Okay. So, So he heard that there were some dentists in the area who believed that hypnotism would help their patients relax during different procedures. And this, quote, sparked his interest in a relatively new phenomenon called spiritualism.
Okay.
What's weird about this for myself is that when I was trying to find out new notes, I was like, oh, I just talked about spiritualism for two episodes. Like, I'm definitely going to try to avoid that. Oh, here's this Dan Aykroyd thing. And then, like, it's all about spiritualism. And I was like, Jesus Christ, like, I cannot get away from this.
The universe is telling you something.
The 1920s and the 2020s are overlapping famously.
Seriously.
So Samuel, who I'm now calling Sam, the great...
Is that Augustus?
Yes.
Okay.
Samuel Augustus Aykroyd is Dan Aykroyd's great-grandfather.
That's doctor to you.
That's Dr. Crentist.
Cool.
Sam and his wife Jenny became obsessed quickly with spiritualism, even having written back and forth with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is, you really
are. Is that
not
the weirdest?
You've been wrapped up in this.
I was reading it and I was like, shut the fuck up. I really thought I like accidentally copy and pasted wrong notes into the wrong stuff.
I don't know if you'll ever escape.
I don't think I will. And remember, for those of you who are listening backwards, welcome, by the way. So Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, I just brought up in the last episode about how he was a crazed believer in spiritualism.
Like, even when Houdini was like, no, this is fake, he was like, no, it's real.
Yeah.
Like,
which means Dan Aykroyd's great-grandfather, by the way, might have known Houdini.
That's true. Hey, Dan, that's pretty neat.
Dan's got a cool life ahead of him.
Man.
And behind him.
And behind him.
So, Sam had books all over the house of spiritualism, and the paranormal became like just a normal conversation in the house with him and his wife. Allison, are you listening? That's goals, is what I'm thinking.
Same.
This is
why we need to buy a giant house and just all live in the same house.
Yeah, except Blaze and Allison then move out quickly.
Right.
And then it's just you and me.
Exactly.
So fun fact, Dan actually is the fourth generation to live in that house. So he has lived in the same farmhouse that his great grandfather was like a big practitioner of spiritualism.
Holy shit.
And then his son and then Dan all also got into this.
This is so cool.
So this house is just like full of energy. So Dan has said, all that stuff was lying around the old farmhouse I grew up in. So I've been kind of steeped in it my whole life.
Wow.
His great-grandfather held weekly seances at the family home. Weekly. Even having a... I shit you not, Christine, I forgot.
What?
Even
no.
having...
No, don't do it.
A medium...
No.
...named Walter.
No, I knew it! What is happening, Em? I think we're in a fucking... I think this is like...
What is going on?
Listen, I'm testing my lucid dream test. Hold on.
I'm pretty sure we're in an alternate reality ran by the Walter that haunts this place. And he's trying to tap into our psyche that he's with us.
I think he's honestly...
He keeps inserting himself.
...fucking with our notes. Like, truly.
I'm not kidding. His name is Walter.
Holy...
So, Dan...
I was like, there's no way. I was like, it can't be.
I swear to God, if I find another story tonight to cover next week and the name Walter's in there, I'm just throwing out the
whole
story.
I'm changing it. Me too.
Yeah, fuck this.
Nope.
So, Sam held weekly seances at his family home. And when I say, like, weekly, this wasn't a quick little hobby. Like, for, like, the rest of his life, he held weekly seances.
Wow.
Even having a medium named Walter move in for 12 years so he could have regular on-site trances.
That's a dream job.
Literally, like someone...
On-site trances.
he literally paid a man to live in his home for 12 years so he could be 24/7 around the clock ready to be a medium.
Just like, ding, ding, ding. I feel like being in a trance. I mean, how does that even work?
I don't know. Like, just like being ready to like go sit at the seance table.
Just like
on
call.
Be a mouthpiece from the afterlife.
Wow.
So according to Sam's journals about the seances, because of course he took every note possible.
Sure.
Apparently, Walter the medium made contact with a lot of notable people, including members of the Ming dynasty.
Whoa!
An Egyptian prince.
Sure.
And then, like, I wouldn't really rank him as the same, but... Even Sam's great-grandfather, he came through. So, like, even, like, generations before him.
I think he's just as important as an Egyptian prince.
Which means Dan's great-great-great-great-grandfather has come through in seances, too.
Holy.
So his whole line is very sensitive, it seems.
Wow.
Walter the medium, I'm now saying it like that because we've covered so many goddamn Walters recently.
So many.
If you're listening to all these episodes, like, in one big chunk, you're going to get so confused.
This is really wild.
So, Walter the medium allegedly would go into a trance and speak languages that he didn't know, like, before the seance began.
See, this is trippy.
apparently he spoke fluent Mandarin when he was in a trance, but if he ever came to, he did not speak anything but English.
I do have a question, though. Like, who was there to be like, yes, this is fluent Mandarin, I'm translating.
Exactly Mandarin.
Who's translating this? Like,
or, like, he's saying a random language, and they're like, what language is that? And he goes, Mandarin!
Right.
Also, apparently a trumpet or some musical instrument once allegedly floated in the air in the middle of a seance. Wow. That's pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
So seances were held on a very rigid schedule and with the exact same people every week to make the spirits more comfortable with showing themselves over time. So if like it kept seeing the same people there, maybe it would get more comfortable or feel more safe to kind of show itself more and more and become more powerful.
Right.
So, but if you like weren't in that first original circle, you like really... by invitation only could also come.
You can't sit with us.
So in Sam's notes, they apparently made a lot of contact and had a whole lot of experiences during seances.
Damn.
But Sam always ends up disappointed because he wanted physical proof or a physical manifestation or ectoplasm or something that showed that he wanted proof after the fact that something had been there.
Right.
And that never happened. So he always got really upset. Like, yeah, the trumpet's in the air and someone's speaking Chinese, but like, really, I need to see like some ectoplasm on hangers like Mina was doing.
Yeah. We've seen it all before.
We've all seen it. We've all seen the animal tissue hand coming out of her undercarriage.
Oh, God.
People are like, what is going on?
Honestly, I was really hoping we never would talk about that again. And yet here we are.
So apparently whenever Sam would ask for physical proof during a seance, the spirit would just say, be patient. It'll happen eventually. But it never did.
That's kind of so rude.
Houdini would say that is your medium that you're paying, like keeping you like rattled and like keeping you on the guess.
Keep paying me and maybe something cool will happen.
Exactly. But he wasn't friends with Houdini. He was friends with Sir Doyle, who's like, oh, that's definitely
the spirits. Well, for sure. You're right. You're totally right.
So Sam's whole family was also involved in these beliefs. And when Sam died in 1933, his son Maurice, who is Dan Aykroyd's grandpa, was also equally obsessed and tried very, very hard to build some sort of machine that would have Sam come back through so Maurice could talk to his father from beyond the grave.
A time machine?
More like a spirit box. He tried to build one of the original like radio frequency devices for a spirit to contact us.
Holy shit.
Apparently it did not work. They never got back in touch with Sam that way, but he at least tried to build one.
That's crazy.
Then Maurice, I'm assuming Maurice's son, Dan's dad, Peter Aykroyd, even as a child, apparently since like 7 years old, he remembers growing up and watching his family be a part of these seances and reading about the paranormal all the time. It was like such a regular concept in his house that Dan Aykroyd's dad grew up not knowing that it was weird.
Wow.
Just being like, oh, they're going to have a seance tonight and then we're going to do this and we're reading about this ectoplasm. And
what time does your family do their seance?
Yeah, exactly. And so his dad actually remembers being in the house and being too young to join in on the seance, but being able to like look into another room and see them performing.
Oh my God. It's like when dad has poker night, you're not allowed to play, but all the guys come over and drink beer.
Exactly.
Instead it's fucking seance.
Exactly.
That is super cool.
So, Dan actually also grew up in that same house and with the same upbringing because by the time now Peter's an adult and having poker night with the spirits.
Sure.
Dan remembers hearing stories about his family's experiences all the time. He even remembers his mom saying that when Dan himself was born, apparently Sam and his wife Jenny, so Dan's great grandparents, actually showed up in his nursery one time, almost as if welcoming him into the family, and then they faded away.
Wow.
So his mom would tell him that story. But so since birth, apparently he's also been gifted with this. Sure. Lineage
and Tourette's.
Yay, welcome to the club.
Seems like they come hand in hand, so
they clearly, you know what,
it's there's a gift.
Here's two pieces of evidence of that, me and Dan Aykroyd.
I mean, what more do you need?
If you have Tourette's, you might be haunted.
His great grandfather was looking for physical proof. I got it right here on
Twitch
video.
Twitch. Okay. So since growing up in it, like in this like whole lifestyle of like the paranormal being like just so blasé and normal,
right,
Dan is very public to this day about his beliefs in the paranormal and is an open spiritualist today.
Wow.
A quote of his is, I am a spiritualist, a proud wearer of the spiritualist badge. Mediums and psychic research have gone on for many, many years, and loads of people have seen spirits, heard a voice, or felt the cold temperature. I believe they are between here and there and that they exist between the fourth and fifth dimensions, and that they visit us frequently.
Wow.
So he's very,
he's
like,
open.
He's like, they fucking exist, and if you don't believe it, you're an idiot.
I hope he hosts SNL and just says that. Just like that. Monologue.
It would be interesting if he did an SNL bit on, of Ghostbusters.
That's true.
I don't know if that's actually... That probably already exists.
probably.
So for a while, once he moved out of that house, because he was like grown up and moved to LA and all that.
Sure.
He did live in another house,
wait,
which was...
Wait, sorry, where is the house?
Did we in Canada.
Do you know where?
Somewhere in Ontario.
Oh, okay.
So... When he grew up and moved out, he ended up moving into another house that was haunted, which actually was formerly owned by Mama Cass from Mamas and Papas.
Oh, wow.
And so Dan says that there is a ghost there that he's pretty sure is Mama Cass.
Shut up.
And so he said, a ghost certainly haunts this house. It once even crawled into bed with me. The ghost also turns on the Stairmaster and moves jewelry across the dresser. So, and he's convinced it's Mama Cass.
Series of events.
So... Ghostbuster. So that idea came from a combination of his family stories and personal stories. Plus, there was a comedy before Ghostbusters called Ghost Chasers.
Oh.
And he, when I tell you, like, he's very involved in the paranormal community. Like, he subscribes to all their journals and keeps up with all the articles and all that. So he was reading an American Society Psychical Research Journal article on parapsychology and quantum physics. And... while reading that, I think he had also recently watched Ghost Chasers.
Oh.
And so he, in his mind, was like, I just want to redo that ghost comedy,
right,
but with modern science and, like, a realistic twist to it.
Damn.
Which, like, now Ghostbusters, you look at it and it's not really a realistic twist, but that was the inspiration of, like, there's all this new science since this came out. Like, let's redo it with, like a modern
believability. I had no idea.
Believability.
You want to know a secret?
Yeah.
I've never seen Ghostbusters.
Okay. Well, I kind of expected that. So,
sorry, everybody.
Sliding on by.
I know. I also hadn't seen
Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus. I've seen it now, so you win. You guys win.
We win on Hocus Pocus, but
I
not
liked,
Ghostbusters.
I like Practical Magic better.
Just say you'll do it now before we get 1,000 tweets saying
I'll
you need
do
to watch
I'll
it.
I'll watch Ghostbusters.
Okay, there you go. So, for example, in the first, like, so he did his own script and then tried to pitch it to other people for
okay.
Ghostbusters. The first draft actually had a few differences in, like, the equipment that they used, but they were actually, I think he tried to make them more kitschy or campy or
sure.
Just for, like, the, because maybe it'd be easier for people to swallow or it'd be more interesting to watch. But in his first draft, the Ghostbusters actually used magic wands.
Whoa!
Instead of proton packs. And they traveled in, instead of like traveling through New York, they traveled through different dimensions. Like, it was much trippier.
Wow.
But he ended up obviously kind of scrapping some of that stuff and creating Ghostbusters, which made like $250 million in the year it came out
I
or something.
Even, that's insane.
And he still, by the way, he still wants to make a third one.
Yeah.
And since 1999, he's been trying to get the original gang together to make a final Ghostbusters where they almost like pass on their,
right,
their duties to someone else. And that script, I don't know if it's necessarily been finalized, but it has been written. It was written by the writing staff of The Office, the U.S.
Holy
office.
Holy shit, really?
Yep. And it was overseen by Dan Aykroyd, but it was written by a lot of the writers from The Office.
Mindy Kaling?
And apparently he will never actually make this movie unless all the original characters are on board and Bill Murray refuses.
I'm like, who's holding out? Bill Murray?
Refuses.
Of all people? Why?
I don't know. And there's a lot of speculation on what the answer... Either he's like really aggressively against it or he's very nice about it and saying no. But like, no
he
matter
just
what,
won't
it's,
do it.
It's Bill Murray's fault, apparently.
How I never thought I'd hear those words.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, it's Bill Murray's fault.
That I did expect to hear, knowing the kind of bullshit he pulls just amongst strangers.
You're correct on that. Yeah, that's true. He causes all sorts of chaos.
He certainly does. So living again in his family farmhouse in Ontario, because he's moved away from Mama Cass's house and also now lives in this farmhouse.
Right.
Dan says that it has, quote, a history of spiritual activity that would blow your mind.
Oh my God.
And apparently there's a lot of activity that goes on in that house, but most often guests report invisible hands yanking off their sheets at night.
Oh, well, that's truly terrible.
Apparently the other things are like the doors will open and close, the lights will go on and off, electronics will turn on and off, all that good stuff. But he did say that whenever he's in that house, he's had some very vivid dreams of his deceased friends.
Wow.
One of them actually was, one of his friends who passed on was Barry Berenson, who was the wife of Tony Perkins, who played Norman Bates in Psycho.
Oh.
So his wife in real life passed away, and I guess her and Dan Aykroyd were really good friends, and he remembers very quickly after her death having an intensely vivid dream where she showed up to say, "I'm helping people who don't understand."
Whoa, Goose Cam.
Yeah. Or, "I'm helping people through who don't understand."
Oh my God. So, like through to the...
To the other side, I guess. To the other side, I guess.
Oh, Goose Cam indeed.
So apparently he remembers that one very intensely. And he's also said that he most often feels his best friend, Jim Belushi, come around.
Oh my. I was like, what other funny guys coming through?
So Jim Belushi was the other Blues Brother in Blues Brothers. And they were also really, really close in SNL. And he ended up dying right before Ghostbusters was made. He was actually supposed to be one of the original people in Ghostbusters. And then he died 2 years before the movie came out. But he, he had a drug overdose and...
Yeah, it's really tragic. Really, really sad.
Really tough. Mm. And he was one of Dan Aykroyd's best friends. And apparently he was also super open-minded to this stuff. And Jim Belushi had said in past interviews that he would regularly visit Dan's house. And they would just, like, sit up all night and try to watch for ghosts and see, like, if anything was, like, would walk around in the house.
What? This is so cool!
And also very sweet and cute.
Also precious!
Yeah, so he used to visit a lot so they could watch...
Like slumber party!
Yeah, to, like, see if any ghosts would show up. Because, like, apparently at one point Dan Aykroyd said he saw his great-grandfather, like, manifest out of nowhere. And so ever since then, it became a thing where they would go to his house and look for ghosts.
That is like our childhoods, pretty much.
He also, apparently, they would go outside and look up at the sky for UFOs.
Okay, I'm on board with all of this.
And Dan Aykroyd has been quoted saying, "I know the spirit survives as there is so much evidence of the survival of the personality in the afterlife."
Wow. So
he says that he can feel Jim Belushi's energy around him a lot.
Wow.
So not only was he interested in ghosts, but he, on his own, separate from his family, was also fascinated with aliens, hence him and Jim Belushi looking around for UFOs all the time.
Sure.
But apparently, so his whole family obviously is into spirits, but UFOs is his thing.
Okay.
So he really got into it when he was a kid, and he's like a magazine cover of a UFO, and ever since then he just like got really into it.
Love it.
He's also a member of MUFON, which I really, really, really want to get into.
I remember that word.
Yeah, it's the Mutual UFO Network. So it's a huge membership, like a society for believers in the UFO. There's also a lot of skeptics there, I think. But it's this huge network, and it's so much information. So I have not covered it, but it is on my list. But he's a member there. He's also like a Hollywood correspondent for MUFON. So
on the red carpet.
Yeah. So he is a staunch, but like even more so it seems than ghosts. He believes in aliens.
Oh, I was gonna say than the guy from Blink 182.
So
wow,
he has only seen four in his life. This is his quote.
Oh, only
four. "I've seen four, one of them with a light, one of them dull gray, one of them going very slow, one of them hovering over me. Then there were the two that my wife and friends and I saw, a high altitude sighting many years ago in Martha's Vineyard. Two flying side by side, two perfect circles flying in tandem that did a beautiful zigzag."
Wow.
Dan believes that aliens already live on Earth, already live here. And
oh, God. Oh, God.
And that evidence has already been shown that they're here, but the government frequently tries to cover it up.
They got me.
Oh, boy.
They got me. Let me remove my skin.
Lemon. It's lemon.
It's lemon. Oh, my God. He came down from outer space.
He certainly did. So Dan also apparently collects UFO pictures, but only really good ones. That's his caveat. Only like super good ones that are hard to prove otherwise. He also recommends a book for people called The FBI CIA UFO Connection by Dr. Bruce McAbee, which apparently reviews documents received after the Freedom of Information Act.
Wow.
So apparently there's some good stuff there.
Oh, my God.
He swears by this book.
Sorry, what's it called one more time?
The FBI CIA UFO Connection by Bruce McAbee.
Okay.
So he has been making very public statements about UFOs, even in 2005, he literally did a 2-hour long documentary called Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs.
What?
So
is this on Sling?
I think it's on YouTube because I did see a link to it. I opened it and it literally was 2 hours long and I was like, I can't. But it's there, so you guys can watch that all you want.
I'm going to watch that.
Apparently, Dan Aykroyd has been quoted saying, the Air Force won't deny the existence of these hyperdynamic, super aerodynamic crafts, but they want to tell you anything but that they're extraterrestrial. So he's a big believer in, like, a government cover-up.
Listen, I'm not doubting that. I'm going to say, Dan, I'm not saying you're wrong.
There's nothing I don't... So far, I don't agree with on this.
Yeah.
Although he claims that they already live on our planet, though, he thinks that they came here originally wanting to communicate with us and now want nothing to do with us because of how violent we are.
Oh, no. Us? What?
He also did use 9/11 as a reference, and I don't have the quote here, but he did say something like, imagine wanting to make friends with this, like, or imagine wanting to get to know, like, this group of people and then just seeing them, like, throwing their most expensive equipment at some of their most expensive equipment and then watching all of their people die. Like, why would you want to interact with something like that?
Yeah, humans aren't super great.
No, he said that they are probably disgusted by us and they're here and don't want anything to do with us.
What are they doing here? Who are, where?
That's my next question. I'm like, okay, so if they are here but don't want to talk to us, why are they here? And I guess
they haven't left, right?
Yeah, I guess to study us from afar. I'm not really sure.
Well, it's pretty easy. I mean, you saw what we do.
It's just not great.
It just keeps happening.
That plus a lot of eating sugar is pretty much all we are.
And then it just repeats itself over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. But sometimes there's like a Ghostbuster in there.
That's true.
So one of his drivers apparently used to work for the Air Force, like in Air Command.
What?
And the driver told him, I guess, not so in confidence, that one day when he was working there, a bunch of guys started gathering around a radar watching an object traveling at 70,000 miles per hour.
What?
And doing whip turns in front of them, and the whole group of people were just freaking the fuck out because they did not know what it was. In the Air Force. Dan has also hosted a Canadian sci-fi show, which I'm now going to be watching, called Sci Factor, PSI, Sci Factor.
Oh my god, that's built for you.
And it's Canadian and a sci-fi show called Sci Factor, starring a Ghostbuster with Tourette's. It's literally my show.
Truly, though.
And it covers paranormal cases that are apparently from the desk, quote, of the Office of Scientific Investigation and Research. So, I don't know. I think it's like recreations, like reenactments, reenactments of different cases. But it might be like a Forensic Files version of the paranormal.
Which is so cool.
And it was...
like an Unsolved Mysteries type thing?
I think so. And it was... God. And it was four... I also have not seen it, so I could be totally wrong. But I know there's 4 seasons of it. And in 1997, he actually won an award from CSI, not the actual CSI. They're from the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, which is like a big paranormal group. In 1997, they gave him an award for hosting that show and for being a, quote, longtime promoter of paranormal claims.
Wow.
Fun fact, not only did Dan stay obsessed with the paranormal, but so did his father, Peter, who used to, like, watch his father perform seances and all that, poker night. So because his dad, because Peter grew up in that same stuff, he had the same interest and the same fascination and just keeps getting passed down from family to family, I guess. Right. In 2009, Peter actually published a book called A History of Ghosts by Peter Aykroyd. And it has been described as, quote, an encyclopedia book on the paranormal. Apparently, everything you can think of is in there.
I'm literally looking at our bookshelf. I'm like, did somebody mail us that? Like,
I don't think so.
We might have it somewhere. We have a lot of ghost books, but...
But it's called A History of Ghosts, and it talks about some of his personal experiences. I did read an excerpt of it, and it was... he was talking about how he remembers looking out the window and seeing, like, people come into his driveway and his dad, like, pulling them into, like, this room he wasn't allowed into.
Wow.
And,
like, oh my God.
Like, how the seances would happen. And so, apparently, there's a lot of really good stuff in there. And it was Dan Aykroyd's dad, Peter. And it was published in 2009. So, that's all I have. I know it's super short, but that is...
So, do they still have the house? Do you know?
Yeah, he still lives there. Oh. Dan Aykroyd still lives there.
Oh, amazing. He lives in Canada?
I think he does.
Cool.
As far as I know, I could be totally wrong, but every article I read said he still lives there.
That is neato.
So that is the Aykroyd family and their fascination with the paranormal.
I love that story. I've never
Had no idea.
No, no clue.
Me either.
I just did thought Ghostbusters was like, mm-hmm. Like, I never thought it was anything based in.
But yeah, what are the odds? I mean, that's like, that means you and I could create our own Ghostbusters.
Yeah, hold on.
It's called Houdini on Broadway. Yeah, actually. Wait. Hang on.
Have you heard of it?
Lynn, are you there?
We're FaceTiming with Lynn later about it. No, we're not. My vision board.
I wish it so badly. Anyway, Dan Aykroyd, a lot of his upbringing is what inspired Ghostbusters. There's your fun fact.
Never have known that. That's a good trivia fact.
I was going to say, I hope someone goes to trivia and that helps you.
Yes. And if it does, send us some of your winnings, especially if it's beer. I would love a beer right now.
Thank you, Dan Aykroyd, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Aykroyd.
I
would love to chat with Mr. Aykroyd.
I would too. If Dan, I think he has like three daughters. If any of you listen to us, please get us in contact with your father. Thank you. Please or your great-grandfather, or your great-great-grandfather, anyone from beyond.
Anyone who can manifest themselves in front of us.
That's exactly right.
I would love to talk, to hear his stories, man. Yes. Seriously. All right. Let's go.
Let's.
So I'm covering a story that I was going to do, then I realized I've already done for Charlotte, and we haven't posted this episode.
No, we have not.
So I'm going to tell you the story now.
Okay.
Hooray.
Let's do it.
I was very excited that I'd already done notes on this. I was like, holy shit.
You're like, well, that works out.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. It's a disappearance, which, you know, I find just beyond fascinating.
You love a good disappearance. People are still... You love when I disappear.
Mostly when M vanishes. So that's the best part. I will say people are still writing in about the Bryce Les Pieces case.
Still?
Yeah, because it's like so wild. Like,
that's pretty good for you. At least your story was super good.
I know. I guess so. Yeah. I think it's fascinating. Okay. So I listened to Trace Evidence podcast for some research on here. Just wanted to give a little shout out. So thank you guys.
Whoop, whoop.
So this is the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman.
Kyle Fleischman. Okay.
So he grew up in Charlotte, attended Charlotte Catholic High School. I'm sure I put that in there because we were in Charlotte and people probably would have heard of it.
Okay.
He studied business administration and management at Elon. That one got a big cheer.
Oh, I know Elon.
Yeah. He was well-liked, was a good student, was really active on campus. He wasn't just like a well-liked frat guy. Like, he was very involved in school and just like a very well-rounded individual that a lot of people, not that frat guys are not well-rounded, just like the stereotypical, he wasn't like the popular kid. It was just like he was really well known and well liked.
Sure.
And very involved.
I gotcha.
And just a good guy.
And also he was not well-rounded because he's such a trash frat guy. Got it.
Exactly. He just knows how to play beer pong.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, just like you.
Me too. Except he doesn't have Tourette's, so he doesn't have that winning guttural throw like I'd have got.
That's just like your golden...
my golden ticket.
Your golden ticket to...
I call that nothing but net.
Buckets. We haven't done that in so long.
No, I miss buckets.
Here, let me try.
You're going to throw your laptop? Girl,
yeah, I didn't print any
We can notes. Use these 30 lemons and play buckets.
Wait, actually, through the ring light.
I was literally thinking that. Stop it. Okay.
Oh, my God. Okay. Hello, everyone. So after graduating from Elon, he was hired by Maxim Healthcare Services, a little less exciting, in Charlotte. And then in the fall of 2007, he moved into a condo with two roommates. That fall in 2007, Kyle was 24 and his mother, Barbara, was diagnosed with cancer.
Mm.
Kyle was extremely close with his mother. So he stepped up and was like, we're going to beat this together. Like, he was just 100% involved in taking care of her. And a few days before her first surgery, Kyle took his mom, Barbara, his sister, Noelle, and his best friend, Daniel, to a Dane Cook comedy show.
Okay.
At the Spectrum Center because they were all big fans.
Sure.
And then, so that was on, this all is important for the timeline. So that
Dane Cook is crucial to this story.
When isn't he, though? November 8th, 2007, Kyle drove over to his best friend, Daniel, the one who was with him at the show, his house to drop off his car. Oh, no, sorry. This is the night of the show. I'm sorry. I put the date in the wrong spot.
I hear you.
November 8th, they're going to this Dane Cook show. Kyle drives to his best friend Daniel's house to drop off his car. Then the two of them take a cab to the show because they're like, we're going to have some drinks.
Sure.
So they go to the show. They meet his mom and sister there. They have a great time. And his mom and sister were tired, so they headed home after the show. But Kyle and Daniel were like, let's go out for drinks. So they go to a place called the Buckhead Saloon, which I looked up on Yelp, and it's since closed.
Huh.
They arrived around 11 p.m., had a few drinks, but Daniel said Kyle was not, like, drunk.
Okay.
He had a few drinks, but he's like, trust me, like, he wasn't wasted. Like, sure. He was just buzzed at most. Around 1 a.m., Daniel decided to head home. He asked Kyle if he was coming or staying, but Kyle was still having a good time and had started talking to a pretty lady.
Mm.
So Kyle was like, you go ahead. I'm going to stay a little bit longer. And that was okay. The last time any of Kyle's friends or family would ever see him.
Oh.
So surveillance footage at the time shows Kyle talking to this woman that he'd befriended at the bar. Then her boyfriend shows up.
Oh.
The video isn't totally clear, but they definitely had a conversation. I don't know how confrontational it was, but the boyfriend definitely showed up, and it's debated whether or not it was a very hostile conversation, but bye, Kyle.
Yes, yeah. Literally
goodbye. Oh, God. How sad. Shortly after this, the surveillance footage shows Kyle leaving the bar. It's 2:20 a.m. at this point, and about a minute before this, cell phone records indicate he called his sister, Noelle, but she didn't pick up. She was sleeping. They had gone home hours before. And he didn't leave a voicemail. So he leaves the bar, but he left... It's really strange. He left his debit card there, which happens. I've done that. But he also left his jacket inside, which is strange because it was freezing temperatures outside.
Got it.
So you think you'd be like, oh, you know, it would remind
you.
I'll
bring my jacket, yeah.
Right. But he did forget both, which, listen, I've done stupider things, so I'm not going to judge
that.
Maybe
he was actually really, like, warm from drinking.
Say, if you're really drunk, you don't even feel it sometimes. So you're right. Could be. So this could indicate, obviously, that he's super drunk, but a private investigator that Kyle's family later hired believes he may have left them there on purpose in an effort to leave the bar really quickly. Like, maybe he was like, forget it. I don't want to bring those things. I'm just going to peace.
Hmm.
And that's backed up by the fact that he's seen reuniting with the woman he'd been talking to, crossing the street with her.
Huh.
Side by side. Boyfriend not there.
Interesting.
So obviously speculation as to like why he was leaving the jacket and the debit card, but two potential theories.
Sure.
Obviously, like, it could have just been carelessness.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Sorry.
So now he's on College Street and he's caught on surveillance one last time, but he's alone now. So he walked across the street with the girl from inside, the woman from inside.
Sure.
On camera. Then a little bit later, he's seen walking alone down the sidewalk.
Okay.
So
we don't know where he went.
Right.
Okay.
Well, so unclear why the two of them were together.
And then not together. Got it.
Right. So he's on College Street, probably exactly what it sounds. He's caught on surveillance one final time. This is the last time he was ever spotted, walking toward a pizza shop. And the footage doesn't indicate that he's super drunk. Like, he's not stumbling. He doesn't look wasted.
Or, like, drugged, maybe. He doesn't look
drugged.
Right,
exactly. Okay. Yeah, he looks pretty sober. He's just kind of chilling, just walking down the street. Which, I mean, obviously people can play off drunkenness. It doesn't necessarily indicate. But he looks pretty sober. He stops at this place called Fuel Pizza. And he orders two slices of extreme.
Yeah.
That seems
that's
like
the way you gotta fucking go at 2 a.m. with pizza.
And then I put parentheses everything.
Okay.
That's a pizza with everything on it. Which his father confirmed later, that is his standard order. He's like, he would always order two slices of extreme.
All right.
So looks like Kyle went to the pizza
place.
Sounds like Kyle. The cashier noted later that he came in alone, ordered his pizza, and then went to the bathroom. At some point, he exits, but the cashier wasn't paying attention, so he didn't know when Kyle left the building, and there's no surveillance footage of Kyle leaving. But there is a strange series of phone calls after this. He's never seen again on footage, but there is a series of strange phone calls made from his phone.
Did he eat the pizza?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if he left without the pizza. I think they probably...
Because it'd be weirder if he ordered it to not eat it.
I think he probably must have eaten it, because I feel like the guy would be like... Oh, and then he left his pizza behind.
Right.
You know,
okay,
I feel
yeah.
like that's strange.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's possible, but my guess is probably he ate it.
That'd be even weirder if he just like totally fucking forgot about his pizza.
Yeah. Or like it wasn't
or
worth
intentionally
it.
Didn't
you don't
eat
leave
it.
Pizza behind unless
that is a goddamn fact.
Something really bad is happening. I hope he ate his pizza. I'm not sure. At 2:42 a.m., Kyle made a 10-second phone call to the Buckhead Saloon. Possibly because he's like, I forgot my debit card and my jacket there.
Right.
Maybe. But the bar was closed at this point, so no one picked up. He then dialed his own voicemail, And then between 2:43 and 2:57, Kyle calls his dad's office number 4 times, but gets no answer. Then at
also, did he expect anything? Because it's closed. It's 2 in the morning, right?
It's his dad's office. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay.
You'd think no, but maybe his dad's a night owl. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
At approximately 3:25 a.m., a cab driver claims to have seen Kyle walking in an area known as North Davidson. He saw, quote, a kid with no jacket who was not in the right place and looked to be intoxicated. So he just said he looked like a college kid out of place, as he wasn't like near the campus anymore. He wasn't like in the college part of town. He had just kind of wandered into a different neighborhood. So that's why the taxi driver like noted something was odd. Several minutes later, after he was seen by this taxi driver, 3:28 a.m., cell phone records indicate Kyle called his friend Daniel Scagnelli. I never said his last name, but that's his last name.
Mm-hmm.
The phone call lasted only 4 seconds, and Kyle didn't leave a voicemail. Less than a minute later, at 3:29 a.m., Kyle calls one of his roommates, and that call only lasts 6 seconds. And then seemingly by 4 a.m., his phone had died.
Damn.
Strange. So the purpose of the calls has obviously been heavily debated because no one knows what he was doing. Some people think he was in trouble and was trying to call his friends and family for help. Some believe he was looking for a ride home.
Mm-hmm.
And some people think that the calls weren't made by Kyle at all, by someone who had gotten a hold of his cell phone.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So either way, the next morning, Daniel wakes up and sees a missed call from Kyle. He calls back, goes straight to voicemail, so he just shrugs it off. But as the day goes on, he does not hear from Kyle, and he starts to get worried. He hasn't heard anything since last night, and Kyle's car is not in the driveway, so he's like, that's not good. Oh no, sorry, it's
still in the driveway. Like he hasn't left.
Yes,
like
he never picked it up. Sorry, I took the cab. Yeah, god, sorry guys, I'm getting way wrapped up in this. Okay. The car is still there. So he's like, well, he never came and got his car and he's not answering his phone. He's starting to get worried. So Daniel calls Kyle's parents. And when they confirm, they also have a bunch of missed calls from Kyle. They call the police and report him as missing. Kyle's family starts searching for signs around the Buckhead Saloon because that's where they knew he was. And Daniel immediately created a Facebook page, which was smart because within 24 hours, it had more than 60,000 people.
Whoa.
Yes. It spread. And he was really well known and popular at school, so I think like
people just kept sharing and sharing.
Exactly. And this is like the height of Facebook, like 2000,
right?
Not 10, 2007, whatever.
Wow.
So yeah, with 60,000 people, and actually this is considered to be the first widespread social media and internet campaign to find a missing person.
Wow.
Fun fact.
That is a fun fact.
Several of Kyle's friends even went on the Today Show to get the word out. They were like so desperate. They were trying to get on any media to spread the word. Police conducted a massive foot search. They didn't find any clues. They pinged the location of his calls. His phone was pinged around 3:30 in the area where the cab driver had spotted him. So like that kind of far away area where it made no sense that he was there, basically.
Sure. Like that weird neighborhood.
Yes. Out of the way. And on Saturday, November 17th, firefighters and 300 volunteers conducted a large-scale search in a 9-mile radius around Charlotte. Yeah. They even brought in search dogs, and they used Kyle's jacket that he had left at the bar as the scent to track him. They almost immediately picked up on his scent. They followed it down College Street. God, dogs are the best.
Just reason 1,000.
How are they the best?
Reason 1 through 1,000 is this.
They literally are working.
I love them so much. For $0.
For $0 to find.
Just because they wanna.
To find missing people. It's wild. Okay. In case you didn't know, dogs are great. They almost immediately picked up on his scent. They followed it down College Street, past the last surveillance camera that had spotted him, and to the outside of the pizzeria. And that's where they began to walk in small circles. Which, according to their handlers, Linda and Mike, is usually an indicator that the missing person may have been looking for something or trying to hide. Now,
because he's like running, he's like frenetically kind of running back and forth on something, or?
I don't know, but it gives me goose cam because they were like, that's how they indicate someone was trying to hide. It's just so bizarrely specific. I don't know. Maybe you have a certain sense of sweat when you're doing that. I have no idea.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
But he could have also been looking for something, like just pacing back and forth.
It says either or looking for something, yeah, or trying to hide. So I guess you're right, like maybe frenetically.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
It's crazy that dogs can like probably just smell anxiety.
And that's
just...
true. They can sense way more than we can. So yeah.
Wow, it blows my mind.
It's so specific. I don't know. Okay, that's what they said. Linda and Mike said it. Listen,
okay, I fucking trust them. I trust them.
I do too.
I trust those dogs more than anything.
Me too. I wrote WTF. So
they have no reason to ever even lie. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm sorry. Let's keep going.
So the path continued down College Street, which turned into North Davidson, the neighborhood where he was spotted, leading to a small bridge that led to Cordelia Park in Villa Heights. The park is super busy during the day, but at night it's known to be the hangout of drug dealers and several gangs, including MS-13. So, not good that he was spotted right near there and his scent led there.
Like he was hiding. Oh, no.
This is terrible.
Oh, no.
The dog's handlers called off the search because it was getting dark, but on their way out, a homeless man struck up a conversation with them, and he told them he had seen Kyle, and he said he'd been killed over at the park, but he didn't know where they took his body. So nobody knows if that's actually true, or maybe it was, because he doesn't know if it was Kyle. I mean, it could have been someone else.
Right.
But it could have been Kyle, not sure. But then, who knows? Nobody can prove, obviously, whether that's true or not. Linda and Mike brought the dogs out again the next day, and they followed the scent to the park again, and then to a construction site only 200 yards away. It was at this construction site that the dogs reacted to what their handlers called the scent of death. Can you imagine, like, your stomach must drop when you see the dog, like, do that certain movement? Oh. So Jesus. All the dirt at the, and they're like, treat? Like, they don't even know.
Can I help now? Did I do the right thing?
Honeys. So all the dirt at the construction site was turned over and fresh because they were building a new apartment complex.
Okay.
And they searched through the dirt as much as they could, but they couldn't find anything. Cadaver dogs were brought in to search the site. They searched every pile of fresh dirt, but came up empty. And within a few months, the developers moved forward and built the apartment complex.
Oh, no.
Which...
So he could have been buried under the building.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that fully eliminated any chance for searching further. And, like, fuck. They couldn't just search because they needed permission and someone owned this.
Yeah, and they were like, no, we're building a building. Sorry.
We need this.
Wow.
More than you.
Wow. Okay.
Apparently.
Right.
And your dogs. In the years following Kyle's disappearance, police have held a lot of information close to the chest. Is it close to the vest or close to the chest? Close to the chest, right?
I don't know.
Half as hardly. Lumber. So they've held most of the information really close because they don't want to release too much information. They're still working on this case. Let's just put it that way.
Sure. Okay.
And so a lot of the information we do have is not from the police, but from Kyle's family.
Okay.
So they made a website.
Poor fucking family.
I know. It's honestly, every time it's just like makes my heart hurt. So his family made a website called helpfindkyle.com, which does not exist any longer.
Okay. That's even worse because it means they gave up.
It is. Yeah. The Facebook page Daniel made still exists, but there's no like usable contact links. Like it doesn't really, it's not usable anymore and they don't update it anymore. They did make a foundation in Kyle's honor called KFF.org, which aims to help people who aren't sure what to do in the first few days after someone goes missing.
Oh, wow.
Which is really
wonderful.
Wonderful.
In a sad situation.
Yeah. It's at least, you know, helping future people. So it's been almost 12 years now since Kyle's disappearance. Police say they still receive tips, but they're obviously fewer and fewer each year, which we see tends to happen with missing persons cases. As far as what happened, there have been a number of theories presented. The first one being some have suggested that Kyle left of his own accord, which apparently actually statistically happens more often than you think, that people, quote unquote, run away, try to create a new identity.
And he was like, fuck this,
just
I'm out.
Pieces. It seems unlikely, though. I mean, most people, I feel like most of the time filmmakers are like, he would never do that. She would never do that. But apparently it does happen.
Okay.
But he had just graduated college. He had a great job. He was pretty happy by all accounts. His mother had just been diagnosed with cancer, and obviously that was traumatizing for him, but he was like so involved and invested in her. And he never showed up for the surgery, so they were like he would have made contact or checked if she was okay or something.
Right.
So he's She's still alive, by the way, today. She survived her chemo treatment and is in remission. So they're like, well, she's still alive and he's never made contact since. Like, they were extremely close.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah. There's just no...
I think
also. There's also been no activity on his social security, which is like, and or any other of his cards, like nothing. So, and that's, I think, probably pretty freaking hard in this day and age to avoid. Some people believe that Kyle's disappearance is linked to two other similar disappearances around the same time. The first was Matt Walker, who disappeared from the same bar, Buckhead Saloon.
Get out. Wow.
In Milwaukee.
Huh. Interesting.
Same name, different city.
Interesting.
Why? I don't know, but it's almost the identical scenario where Max was last seen by a friend at 1:45 a.m. Security footage captured him exiting and drunk, and he never was seen again.
Whoa.
And it was this, I think, like the same month or something, and it was the same name of the bar. It's so weird. It's more like conspiracy theory, you know, like,
yeah, but still creepy.
Oh, it's extremely creepy. But there's, beyond that, there's no like real link, but they, you know, same age, just very strange.
Mm-hmm.
They did also find his body.
Okay.
So that's one big major difference. And it was found in the Milwaukee River and was declared an accidental drowning.
Shit. Okay. Well,
so I think maybe
someone got found.
Rule that one out. Another case with weird parallels is Justin Gaines, who vanished outside of Wild Bill's nightclub in Duluth, Georgia, only a week prior to Kyle's disappearance. Some people are just trying to connect the dots. Again, no official proof. A career criminal, though, later admitted to shooting and killing Justin, but his body has never been recovered. And so there's coincidences there, but nothing can be proven. Some think he was the victim of a hit and run. Now, I think this is an interesting theory. They think maybe he was hit by a car and the person panicked and put his body in the car and disposed of it in any number of the desolate areas of North Carolina.
Interesting.
But typically in a hit and run case where someone panics, they don't get out and pick up the body. They drive away.
Right, right, right.
Which actually that when I read that the first time, I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I guess you wouldn't be like,
yeah,
I'm going to go pick him up and drag him into my car. That's like,
right.
If you're afraid of being seen, you're way more likely to be seen dragging a body.
Truly. Yeah. It looks much more suspicious that way.
Correct. Also, police probably looked. There were no bloody vehicles that showed up, which usually they keep an eye out for. And people report that if like a body shop, if a bloody car comes
right.
in.
Good to know, at least, that they don't keep quiet on that.
Thanks for looking out. So one other theory is that Kyle was murdered in a drug deal gone wrong. Because Kyle had grown up in Charlotte, he knew what went down in Cordelia Park. Like, he was no stranger to that area and what happened down there at night. So
he knew that he was in a bad part of town if he was sober enough.
Yes, and he wasn't known to be a drug user, but it's possible maybe he wanted some marijuana. He had reportedly smoked before. Then again, he only had $6 in his wallet, so it's like either he
I think he just stumbled into the wrong area and just got caught up in something.
It's strange. And like either he was so drunk that he didn't know where he was and he went the wrong way, or he was so like, why would he go to the park? It's just weird. Or he was so drunk that he didn't know he had $6 on him. The most common theory, like you were saying, is that Kyle was a victim of a random act of violence. The theory suggests Kyle somewhat drunkenly wandered into the park, encountered someone or a group of someone's who wanted to rob him. He had $6. So at this point, the theory branches that either they tried to rob him, saw he had barely any money and killed him, or he ran into members of MS-13 who saw him as an easy target, who was possibly a witness, and murdered him.
Shit.
So in this case, it's not believed Kyle was... What? Oh, no. So, sorry. I have one eye behind my microphone. I'm trying to read with one eye.
It is very difficult to give you accurate notes when you're reading with an eye patch, essentially.
Yeah, this microphone has become kind of that. So, in this case, if this is what happened, this random act of violence, it's believed that Kyle was murdered and his body was disposed of probably at the construction site where the dogs led to the scent. And there was fresh dirt that day.
Mm-hmm.
I find that to be the most plausible theory.
Still terrible.
Terrible. The question is, if it was one person who killed him, how did they so thoroughly hide it that even cadaver dogs who looked through the dirt couldn't find it?
Right, right.
So they did search it.
Did they cut him up and put them in different chunks. I feel
like that takes so much time, though, and, like, effort.
I don't know.
I feel I guess so. You know, I feel like...
I haven't done it personally, so I'm not sure how long it takes.
Oh, weird. You should try.
I thought only like 7 minutes-ish, like 5 to 7 minutes.
I'd say more like 11.
You're doing it wrong.
I guess I'm doing it wrong. You need to teach me your way. Skillshare. Nope. I'm not going to connect Skillshare to this. Aha, just a joke. Okay. Hope they don't listen to the full episodes. Okay. The question is, how did they dispose of the body to the point that cadaver dogs couldn't find it? But even if it was, I feel like even if it was cut up, it would be more likely that one part of it would have been found.
Yeah, actually.
So I don't know.
Maybe they like put them in like a, some sort of like vacuumed bag or something.
They vacuum sealed.
Well, that like keeps the scents away, you know?
Well, they smelled him though. They just couldn't find him.
Maybe it was just like a faint smell. So they didn't.
Maybe.
I don't know. Look, I was not there.
You weren't? Okay.
Not the whole time.
And also, if this was gang violence and they like so carefully hid the body, why the fuck did they take the time to do that? Like they they don't care typically. Like if someone is killed in that like a random, they wouldn't like cut up his body and take the time to hide it. Like because no one could trace it to them.
An initiation or something. But that's true. Like now that you're saying that, I'm thinking, oh yeah, they literally would have just killed him and then walked away.
If it's literally MS-13, they don't give a they don't take the time to like It didn't make any sense. So it's unclear. I still think this is the most sensible theory, that maybe it just was buried too far or like farther away than where they looked or who knows. One other theory I found interesting is that the boyfriend from the Buckhead Saloon had something to do with it. Remember? So I, of course, did a deep dive on Reddit. I found a number of people who actually knew Kyle in college and said that although he was a decent guy, he had a tendency to become angry when drunk. He was known to be a social drinker, so if he was flirting with that girl and then had an altercation with the boyfriend, a lot of his friends were like,
hot-headed.
Yes, hot-headed. Our prediction is things would have gone awry. Apparently, the boyfriend was the primary person of interest when the police first got involved, but nothing has proved that he has anything to do with it. So I think like they thoroughly searched that lead, and it didn't lead anywhere. At this point, it's been almost 12 years. It seems like nobody's any closer to finding out what happened, which is just I feel like it's just so hard enough to, I mean, obviously to have someone, to lose someone and then to not know must be
right. Even if you're 99.99% sure, it's like there's, you like always awkwardly hold out one inch of hope.
You can't have closure.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's really terrible. His, for what it's worth, his parents are convinced he was killed in a robbery gone wrong. So that's kind of where they are. They think he's buried under the apartment complex next to Cordelia Park. They've tried to move on as much as they can. They say they no longer harbor the hope that he's alive, but they still want to know what happened. And they're hoping for tips and information that could lead to an arrest. And they wholeheartedly believe that someone in Charlotte knows something. So anyone with information as to what happened to Kyle, Kyle Fleischman, full name, is urged to contact Crime Stoppers at 704-334-1600. And that is the story of the disappearance of Kyle Fleischman.
Yikes.
Sorry, wow. I started speaking fast. My computer was dying, so I was like, I can't lose the story. We need to know.
Oh, my gosh. Well.
And then we still didn't get a satisfying ending.
Yeah, so. That felt good.
My bad.
Wow. That's really sad. 12 years it's been.
12 years almost, yeah.
Wow.
It's really sad.
Yeah, and that was your Charlotte live show.
Charlotte, yeah. I must have bummed you all out.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
And that's why we changed our format. So please come to our new shows where everything is different and happy and fun.
Oh my God, we have so much fun.
If you would like to get tickets for our shows, go to thatswhywedrink.com/tour. No, live. /live.
Oh boy. All right, folks. Thank you for listening. Truly, if there is ever anything, any story that I tell, I know that like... it's so unlikely, but if there is any story I tell where you're like, huh, I live in that area and like maybe he looks familiar, just try.
Just a shout out. Yeah.
Can't hurt to try and contact
him. If you see something, say something.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's how it's happened. People have been, cases have been solved when people kind of recognize somebody or come forward with information. So you never know.
Oh yeah.
You never know. Could be some closure for some people.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for listening, and we will be back with you next week, and we can't wait.
And? That's why.
Wait, which one?
And?
That's
why
we
drink. Did I do it wrong?
I lost my place. I was like,
five words.